Cusfor shook his head. She hasn't come this far east yet. I think she's trying to consolidate her position before she comes this way. The Emperor won't mourn the loss of Darsheva, Rengel, and Vorsebo very much. And Paldane and Gandahar are more trouble than they're worth. Xelanta, and certainly Mersina, are altogether different matters, though. Oh, truly, Silk agreed. Cusfor frowned. I did hear something, though, Your Highness. There's a rumor going around the waterfront that Zandramas's cohort, Naradus, hired a ship for Mersina a few days ago. Naradus? Your Highness may never have seen him, but he's fairly easy to pick out in a crowd. He has absolutely white eyes. Cusfor shuddered. Gruesome-looking fellow. Anyway, he's reputed to have been with Zandramas since the beginning. And as I understand it, he's her right arm. There are some other rumors as well. But I don't think I should repeat them in the presence of the ladies.
He looked apologetically at Polgara, Tsenedra, and Velvet. Silk tapped his forefinger thoughtfully on his chin.
So, Naradus went to Mersina. I think I'd like to get a few more details about that. I'll circulate some people around the waterfront, Your Highness. I'm sure we'll be able to find someone who can give us more information.
Good, Silk said, rising to his feet. If you find someone, send him to me at the Lion Inn. Tell him that I'll be very generous.
Of course, Your Highness.
Silk hefted the leather pouch at his belt. I'll need some money, he noted.
I'll see to it at once, Prince Galdar.
As they left the building and walked down the polished stone steps toward their horses, Belden made a disgusted sound.
It's unwholesome, he muttered.
What is? Belgarath asked him.
How lucky you are!
I don't quite follow you.
Isn't it remarkable that Cusfor just happened to remember the one thing you really had to know? He threw it out almost as an afterthought.
The gods have always been fond of me, Belgarath replied complacently.
You think of luck as a god? Our master would put you on bread and water for several centuries if he heard you talking like that.
It may not have been entirely luck, Durnick said thoughtfully.
This prophecy of ours has nudged people a bit now and then. I remember one time in Arindia, when Tsenedra was supposed to give a speech. She was so terrified she was almost sick until a drunken young nobleman insulted her. Then she got angry, and her speech set fire to the whole crowd. Paul said that maybe the prophecy had made him get drunk, so that he would insult Tsenedra, in order to make her angry enough to give the speech. Couldn't this have been sort of like that? Fate instead of luck?
Belden looked at the smith, his eyes suddenly alight.
Why, this man is a jewel, Belgarath. I've been looking for someone to talk philosophy with for centuries now, and here he is, right under my nose.
He put his large, gnarled hand on Durnick's shoulder.
When we get to that inn, my friend, you and I are going to begin a very long conversation. It might just go on for several centuries.
Polgara sighed. The Lion Inn was a large building with walls of yellow brick and a red tile roof. A broad stairway led up to an imposing main door, attended by a liveried footman. Where are all the stables? Durnick asked, looking about. Probably around back, Silk replied. Melusine architecture is a bit different from the style in the West. As they dismounted, two grooms came trotting around the building to take their horses. Silk mounted the stairs, and the footman at the door bowed deeply to him.
"This house is honored by your presence, Prince Keldar," he said. "My master's waiting inside to greet you."
"Why, thank you, my good man," Silk replied, giving him a coin. "There may be someone along later to see me. It's possible that he will be a sailor or a longshoreman. When he arrives, would you be so good as to send him to me immediately?"
"Of course, Your Highness."
The top floor of the inn was palatial. The rooms were large and deeply carpeted. The walls were covered with white mortar, and the windows were draped with blue velvet. The furnishings were massive and comfortable-looking. The doorways were arched. Durnick wiped his feet carefully before entering. He looked around.
"Well, they seem to be awfully fond of arches," he noted. "I've always preferred post and lintel construction myself. For some reason, I just don't quite trust an arch."
"Oh, it's perfectly sound, Durnick," Silk assured him.
"Oh, I know the theory," Durnick said. "Trouble is that I don't know the man who built the arch, so I don't know if he can be trusted."
"Do you still want to talk philosophy with him?"
Belgarath said to Belden.
"Why not? Solid practicality has a place in the world, too. And sometimes my speculations get a little airy."
"I think the word is windy, Belden. Windy."
"You didn't really have to say that, did you?"
Belgarath looked at him critically.
"Yes," he replied. "I think I did."
Polgarat Zenedra and Velvet retired to an elaborate bath that was even larger than those in their quarters in the Imperial Palace at Malzeth. While the ladies were bathing, Silk excused himself.
"There are a few other things I need to attend to," he explained.
"I won't be very long."
It was after bath time, but before supper time, when a wiry little fellow in a tar-smeared canvas smock was escorted into the main sitting room.
"I was told that there was a Prince Keldar as was wanting words with me," he said, looking around.
He spoke in a brogue almost identical to Feldegast's.
"Ah," Garion floundered. "The prince has stepped out for a moment."
"I surely don't have all day to sit around cooling me heels, me boy," the little fellow objected. "I've things to do and people to see, don't you know?"
"I'll handle this, Garion," Durnick said mildly.
"But..."
"It's no problem at all," Durnick said just a bit more firmly.
He turned to the little dockhand.
"What prince just had a few questions, is all," he said in an almost lazy tone. "It's nothing that you and I can't take care of without bothering His Highness," he laughed then. "You know how these high-born people are. Excitable."
"Oh, that's the truth, surely. There's nothing like a little title to rob a man of his good saints."
Durnick spread his hands.
"What can I say?" he said. "Why don't we sit down and talk a bit? Would you take a spot of ale?"
"I've been known to take a sup from time to time," the little fellow grinned. "You're a man after me own heart. What trade is it you follow me, friend?"
Durnick held out his calloused and burn-scarred hands.
"Oh, I'm a blacksmith," he admitted.
"Hush!"
the dark hand exclaimed.
"'Tis a hot and heavy line of work you've choose for yourself. I labor on the docks myself. 'Tis heavy enough. But at least it's out in the open air."
"It is indeed,"
Durnick agreed in that same easy-going fashion. Then he turned and snapped his fingers at Belgarath.
"Why don't you see if you can find some ale for my friend and me?" he suggested. "Get some for yourself, too, if you're of a mind."
Belgarath made a number of strangling noises and went to the door to talk to the servant waiting outside.
A relative of my wife's, Durnick confided to the tar-smeared man. Not quite bright, but she insists that I keep him on. You know how that goes.
Oh, by the gods, yes. Me own dear wife's got cousins by the score who can't tell one end of a shovel from the other. They can surely find the ale barrel and the supper table, though.
Durnick laughed. Who's the work? On the docks, I mean.
Oh, 'tis cruel hard. The masters keep all the gold for theirselves, and we get the brass.
Durnick laughed ironically. Isn't that always the way of it?
It is indeed, me friend, it is indeed.
Well, there's no justice in the world, Durnick sighed. And a man can only bow to the ill winds of fortune.
How truly ye speak. I see that you've suffered under unkind masters yourself.
Oh, a time or two, Durnick admitted. He sighed. Well, on to the business at hand, then. The prince has got a certain interest in a fellow with white eyes. Have you ever seen him?
Oh,
the dock hand said.
That one. May he sink in a cesspool up to the eyebrows.
You've met him, then, I take it.
And the meeting gave me no pleasure, I can tell ye.
Well, then, Durnick said smoothly, I can see that we're of the same opinion about this fellow.
If it's in your mind to kill him, I'll lend you me cargo hook.
It's a thought, Durnick laughed.
Geryon stared in amazement at his honest old friend. This was a sight of Durnick he had never seen before. He glanced quickly to one side and saw Polgora's eyes wide with astonishment. At that moment, Silk came in, but stopped as Velvet motioned him to silence.
However, Durnick went on slyly, what better way to upset somebody that we both dislike than to overturn a scheme he's been hatching for a year or more?
The dockhand's lips peeled back from his teeth in a feral grin.
I'm listening, my friend, he said fervently. Tell me how to spoke the white-eyed man's wheel, and I'm with you to the end.
He spat in his hand and held it out. Durnick also spat on his palm, and the two of them smacked their hands together in a gesture as old as time. Then the smith lowered his voice confidentially.
Now, we've heard that this white-eyed one, may all of his teeth fall out, hired a ship from Elsina. What we need to know is when he left, on what ship, who went with him, and where he was to land.
Oh, simplicity in itself, the deckhand said expansively, leaning back in his chair.
You there, Durnick said to Belgarath. Is that ale on the way?
Belgarath made a few more strangling noises.
It's so hard to get good help these days, Durnick sighed.
Polgara tried very hard to stifle a laugh.
Well, now,
the deckhand said, leaning forward in that same confidential manner.
This is what I've seen with me own two eyes, so I'm not handing along second-hand information. I seen this white-eyed one come to the docks on a morning about 5 days ago. 'Twas about daybreak, it was, and one of them cloudy mornings when you can't tell the difference between the fog and the smoke, and you don't want to breathe too deep of either. Anyway, the white-eyed one, he had a woman with him, in a black satin robe with a hood covering her head. And she had a little boy with her.
How do you know it was a woman?
Durnick interrupted.
Have you no eyes, man?
The dockhand laughed.
They don't walk the same as we do. There's a certain swaying of the hips that no man alive could imitate. 'Twas a woman right enough, and you have me word on that.
and the little boy was as fair as a morning sunrise. But he seemed a little sad. A sturdy little lad he was, and looked for all the world as if he wished he could put his hands on a sword to rid himself of them, as he didn't like too much. Anyway, they went aboard ship, and the ship, she slipped her hawsers and rowed off into the fog.
Word was that they was bound for the city of Malcina, or some well-hidden cove nearby, smuggling not being an unknown in these parts, don't you know?
And this was 5 days ago, Dernick asked.
5 or 4. Sometimes I lose track of the days.
Dernick seized the man's tar-smeared hand warmly.
My friend, he said, between us, we'll kick all the spokes out of the white-eyed man's wheel yet.
I'd surely like to help with that kicking,
the dockhand said a bit wistfully.
Oh, you have, friend, Dernick said. You definitely have. I'll kick a time or two for you myself. Silk, the smith said very seriously. I think our friend here should have something to pay him for his trouble.
Silk, looking a bit awed, shook a few coins out of his purse.
Is that the best you can do?
Dernick asked critically. Silk doubled the amount. Then, after a glance at Dernick's disapproving expression, doubled that in gold. The dockhand left, his fist clutched protectively around his coins. Velvet rose wordlessly to her feet and curtsied to Dernick with profound respect.
Where did you learn how to do that? Silk demanded.
Dernick looked at him with some surprise.
Well, I haven't. You ever tried in horses at a country fair before, Silk? He asked.
As I told ye, my old friend, Belden said gaily, the old speech has not died out altogether, and 'tis music to me ears to hear it again.
Must you?
Belgareth said in a highly offended tone. He turned to Dernick.
What was all that folksy business?
Dernick shrugged.
Oh, I've met that sort of man many times. They can be very helpful, if you give them a reason to be. But they're very touchy. So you have to approach them just right, he smiled. Given a little time, I could have sold that fellow a 3-legged horse and convinced him that he'd gotten the best of the bargain.
Oh, my Dernick, Polgara said, throwing her arms about the smith's neck. What would we ever do without you?
Well, I hope we never have to find out, he said. All right, Belgareth said. Now that we know that Zandramos went to Melcina, the question is, why?
To get away from us, Silk suggested.
I don't think so, Keldar, Tzadi disagreed. Her center of power is in Dasheva. Why should she run off in the other direction?
I'll work on that. What's in Malcina?
Velvet asked.
Oh, not too much, Silk replied. Unless you count all of the money in Malcina itself. Most of the world's supply, last time I heard. Would Zandramos be interested in money?
The blonde girl asked. No, Polgara said very firmly. Money would have no meaning to her, not at this point. It's something else.
The only thing that means anything to Zandramos right now is the Sardian, isn't it?
Geryon said.
Could the Sardian be out there in the islands someplace?
Belden and Belgarath exchanged a look.
What does that phrase mean?
Belden demanded in exasperation.
Think, Belgarath. What does it mean when they say, the place which is no more? Well, you're smarter than I am, Belgarath retorted. You answer the riddle. I hate riddles.
I think
About all we can do at this point is trail along behind and find out, Silk said. Xandramas seems to know where she is going, and we don't. That doesn't leave us much choice, does it?
The Sardian came to Jorot as well, Geryon mused. It was a long time ago, but the orb picked up its trail just outside of town. I'll go down to the docks and see if both trails are still running together. It's possible that Xandramas has some way of following the Sardian, the same as we do. She might not really know where it's going. Maybe she's just following it.
He's got a point there, Belden said.
If the Sardian is hidden somewhere out there in Melsina, this could all end before the week is out,
Geryon added.
It is too early, Polgara said flatly.
Too early?
Zinedra exclaimed.
Lady Polgara, my baby has been gone for over a year now. How can you say it is too early?
It has nothing to do with that, Zinedra, the sorceress replied. You have waited a year for the return of your baby. I waited 1,000 years and more for Geryon. Fate and time and the gods pay no attention to our years. But Saradus said at Ashaba that we still had 9 months until the final meeting, and it has not been that long yet.
She might have been wrong,
Zinedra objected.
Perhaps, but only by a second or so either way.
Chapter 4 It was foggy in the harbor the next morning. One of those thick early autumn fogs that always hovers on the verge of rain. As they were loading the horses, Geryon glanced up and found that he could see no more than a few feet up the masts of the ship that they were boarding. Silk stood on the aft deck, talking with the ship's captain.
"It should bear off when we get a few leagues out to sea, Your Highness," the captain was saying, as Geryon approached. "There's a fairly steady wind that always blows down the passage between the coast and Messina."
"Good," Silk said. "I wouldn't want to run into anything. How long is it likely to take us to get to Messina?"
"Most of the day, Your Highness," the captain replied.
"It's a fair distance, but the prevailing wind works to our advantage. The return voyage takes several days, though." "We will all be loaded shortly," Silk told him.
"We can leave any time you're ready, Your Highness."
Silk nodded and joined Geryon at the rail. "Are you feeling any better?" he asked.
"I don't quite follow you."
"You were just a bit grumpy when you got up this morning."
"Sorry, I've got a lot on my mind."
"Spread it around," Silk suggested. "Worries get lighter when you've got people to share them with you."
"We're getting closer,"
Geryon said.
"Even if this meeting doesn't happen out here in the islands, it's still only a matter of a few more months."
"Good. I am getting a little tired of living out of a saddlebag."
"But we don't know what's going to happen yet."
"Of course we do. You are going to meet Xandramas. Divide her down the middle with that big knife of yours, and take your wife and son back to Riva where they belong."
"But we don't know that, Silk."
"We didn't know you were going to win the duel with Torak either, but you did. Anyone who goes around picking fights with gods has very little to fear from a second-rate sorceress."
"How do we know she's second-rate?"
"She's not a disciple, is she?"
"Or would the word be discipleless?" "How would I know?"
Geryon smiled faintly, then grew serious again.
"I think Xandramas has stepped over discipleship. She's the child of Dark, and that makes her a bit more serious than an ordinary disciple."
He banged his fist down on the rail.
"I wish I knew what I'm supposed to do. When I went after Torak, I knew. This time, I'm not sure."
"You'll get instructions when the time comes, I'm sure."
But if I knew, I could sort of get ready.
I get the feeling that this is not the sort of thing you can get ready for, Geryon.
The little man glanced over the rail at the garbage bobbing in the water beside the ship.
Did you follow the trail all the way to the harbor last night?
Geryon nodded.
Yes, both of them. Both Zandramas and the Sardian left from here. We're fairly sure that Zandramas is going to Malcina. Only the gods know where the Sardian went.
And probably not even they.
A large drop of water fell from the rigging, lost in the fog overhead, and landed with a splat on Silk's shoulder.
Why is it always me? The little man complained.
What?
Anytime something wet falls out of the sky, it lands on me.
Maybe somebody's trying to tell you something,
Geryon grinned. Toth and Durnik led the last of the horses up the gangway and on down into the hold.
That's the lot, Captain, Silk called. We can leave any time now.
Yes, Your Highness, the captain agreed.
He raised his voice and started shouting orders.
I've been meaning to ask you about something,
Geryon said to Silk.
Always before you acted almost as if you were ashamed of your title. Here in Meloria, though, you seem to want to wallow in it.
What a fascinating choice of words.
You know what I mean.
Silk tugged at one earlobe.
In the West, my title is an inconvenience. It attracts too much attention, and it gets in my way. Things are different here in Meloria. Here, nobody takes you seriously unless you have got a title. I have got one, so I use it. It opens certain doors for me, and permits me to have dealings with people who wouldn't have time for Ambar of Kartu or Radek of Boktor. Nothing's really changed, though.
Then all of that posturing and pomposity, pardon the terms, are just for show?
Of course they are, Geryon. You don't think I've turned into a complete ass, do you?
A strange thought came to Geryon.
Then Prince Skeldar is as much a fiction as Ambar and Redek, isn't he?
Of course he is.
But where's the real Silk?
Oh. It's very hard to say, Geryon, Silk sighed. Sometimes I think I lost him years ago.
He looked around at the fog.
Let's go below. Murky mornings always seem to start off these gloomy conversations.
A league or so beyond the breakwater, the sky turned a rusty color, and the fog began to thin. The sea, lying to the east of the coast of Meloria, rolled in long, sullen swells that spoke of vast stretches of uninterrupted water. The ship ran before the prevailing wind, her prow knifing through the swells, and by late afternoon the coast of the largest of the Melcine Islands was clearly visible on the horizon. The harbor of the city of Melcina was crowded with shipping from all over Meloria. Small and large, the vessels jostled against each other in the choppy water as Silk's captain carefully threaded his way toward the stone quays thrusting out from the shore. It was dusk by the time they had unloaded, and Silk led them through the broad streets toward the house he maintained there. Melcina appeared to be a sedate, even stuffy city. The streets were wide and scrupulously clean. The houses were imposing, and the inhabitants all wore robes in sober hues. There was none of the bustle here that was evident in other cities. The citizens of Melcina moved through the streets with decorum, and the street hawkers did not bawl their wares in those strident voices that helped so much to raise that continual shouted babble that filled the streets of less reserved cities. Although Melcina lay in a tropic latitude, the prevailing breeze coming in off of the ocean moderated the temperature enough to make the climate pleasant. Silk's house here was what might be more properly called a palace.
It was constructed of marble and was several stories high. It was fronted by a large formal garden and flanked by stately trees. A paved drive curved up through the garden to a porch lined with columns, and liveried servants stood attentively at the entryway.
"Opulent," Tsadi noted as they dismounted.
"Oh, it's a nice little place," Silk admitted in an offhand way. And then he laughed. "Actually, Tsadi, it's mostly for show. Personally, I prefer shabby little offices in back streets. But Malsina takes itself very seriously, and one has to try to fit in if one plans to do business here. Let's go inside."
They went up the broad steps and through an imposing door. The foyer inside the door was very large, and the walls were clad with marble. Silk led them on through the foyer and up a grand staircase. "The rooms on the ground floor are given over to offices," he explained. "The living quarters are up here."
"What sort of business do you do here?" Dernick asked. "I didn't see anything that looked like a warehouse."
"There aren't many warehouses in Melsina," Silk said as he opened a door and led them into a very large blue-carpeted sitting room. "The decisions are made here, of course, but the goods are normally stored on the mainland. There's not much point in shipping things here and then turning around and shipping them back again."
"Well, that makes sense," Dernick approved.
The furnishings of the room they had entered were ornate. Divans and comfortable chairs were clustered in little groupings here and there, and wax candles burned in sconces along the wood-paneled walls.
"It is a little late to be wandering around the streets looking for Zandramas," Silk observed. "I thought we might have something to eat, get a good night's sleep, and then Garion and I can start out early in the morning."
"That's probably the best way to go at it," Belgarath agreed,
sinking down onto a well-upholstered divan.
"Could I offer you all something to drink while we are waiting for dinner?" Silk asked.
"I thought you'd never ask," Velden growled, sprawling in a chair and scratching his beard.
Silk tugged at a bell pull, and a servant entered immediately.
"I think we'll have some wine," Silk told him.
"Is your highness?"
"Bring several varieties."
"Have you got any ale?" Belden asked. "Wine sours my stomach."
"Bring ale for my messy friend as well," Silk ordered. "And tell the kitchen that there will be 11 of us for dinner."
"At once, your highness."
The servant bowed and quietly left the room.
"You have bathing facilities, I assume?"
Bulgara asked, removing the light cloak she had worn on the voyage.
"You bathed just last night in Jarod, Paul," Belgarath pointed out.
"Yes, father," she said dreamily. "I know."
"Each suite has its own bath," Silk told her. "Oh, they're not quite as large as the one in Sakath's palace, but they'll get you wet."
She smiled and sat on one of the divans.
"Oh, please, everybody, sit down," Silk said to the rest of them.
"Do you think any of your people here might know what's going on out in the world?" Belgarath asked the little man.
"Oh, naturally."
"Why naturally?"
"My boyhood occupation was spying, Belgarath, and old habits die hard. All of my people are instructed to gather information."
"What do you do with it?"
Velvet asked him.
He shrugged.
"I sort through it. I get almost as much pleasure from handling information as I do from handling money."
"Do you forward any of this information to Javelin and Bokhtor?"
"Oh, I send him a few crumbs now and then, just to remind him that I'm still alive."
"Oh, I'm sure he knows that, Silk."
"Why don't you send for someone who can bring us up to date?" Belgarath suggested. "We have been out of touch for quite a while, and I would sort of like to know what certain people are up to."
"Right," Silk agreed.
He tugged the bell pull again, and another liveried servant responded.
"Would you ask Vetter to step in here for a moment? Silk asked. The servant bowed and left. My factor here, Silk said, taking a seat. We lured him away from Brador's secret police. Oh, he's got a good head for business. And he's had all that training in the intelligence service. Vetter proved to be a narrow-faced man with a nervous tic in his left eyelid.
Your Highness wanted to see me,
he said respectfully as he entered the room. Oh, there you are, Vetter, Silk said. I have been back in the hinterlands, and I was wondering if you could fill me in on what has been happening lately.
Here in Messina, Your Highness.
Oh, perhaps a bit more general than that.
All right.
Vetter paused, gathering his thoughts.
There was a plague in Malzeth. The Emperor sealed the city to prevent the spread of this disease. So for a time, we could not get any information out of the capital. The plague has subsided, however, so the gates have been opened again. The Emperor's agents are moving freely around Menoria now. There was an upheaval in central Coranda. It appeared to have been fomented by a former Grolem named Minga. The Korans all believed that there were demons involved. But Korans think that there's a demon behind any unusual occurrence. It does appear, though, that there were at least a few supernatural events in the region. Minga has not been seen for quite some time, and order is being gradually restored. The Emperor took the business seriously enough to summon the army back from Tol Murgos to put down this uprising.
Has he rescinded that order yet? Silk asked. If things are quieting down in Coranda, he's not going to need all of those troops, is he? Vetter shook his head in disagreement.
The troops are still landing at Malgamilla. The word we've been getting out of Malzeth is that the Emperor has lost his enthusiasm for the conquest of Tol Murgos. He had personal reasons for the campaign in the first place, and those reasons don't seem to be as pressing anymore. His major concern at the moment seems to be the impending confrontation between the disciple Irvan and Zandramas the sorceress. That situation is about to come to a head. Irvan seems to be suffering from some sort of mental instability, but his subordinates are moving large numbers of people into the region in preparation for something fairly major. Zandramas is also marshaling her forces. Our best assessment of the situation is that it's only going to be a matter of time before the Emperor moves his forces out of Malzeth to restore order. There have been reports of supplies being stockpiled at Magarin. It's apparent that Kaa Zakath intends to use it as a staging area.
Were we able to capitalize on that in any way? Silk asked intently.
To some degree, Your Highness. We sold a part of our bean holdings to the Bureau of Military Procurement just today.
What was the price?
About 15 points above what we paid.
You had better get word to Kasvor and Gerard, Silk said with a sour expression. I told him to sell at 13. The Malassine Consortium has been making offers. Is the price likely to go higher?
Vetter spread one hand and rocked it back and forth uncertainly.
Let the word get out that we sold at 15 and tell Kasvor to hold out for that figure. Even if the price goes to 16, we will have still taken most of the profit out of the transaction.
I'll see to it, Your Highness.
Vetter frowned a bit.
There is something going on in Delesia,
he continued his report.
We haven't been able to get the straight of it yet, but the Delesians all seem to be very excited about it. Kel has been sealed off, so we cannot get anybody there to investigate.
And Kel is the source of just about everything that goes on in Delesia.
Any news from the west? Geryon asked.
Things are still stalemated in Tol Murgos,
Vetter replied.
Kal Zakath is reducing his forces there, and he's called all of his generals home. He is still holding the cities in eastern Tol Murgos, but the countryside is reverting. It is not certain whether King Urgot is going to take advantage of the situation. He has other things on his mind.
Oh? Silk asked curiously.
He's getting married. A princess from the House of Than, as I understand it.
Silk sighed.
King Gethel of Mishrekechtul died,
Vetter went on.
And he was succeeded by his son, Nathal. Nathal's a hopeless incompetent, so we can't be sure how long he will last.
Vetter paused, scratching at his chin.
We have had reports that there was a meeting of the Elorn Council at Boktor. The Elorns get together once a year, but it is usually at Riva. About the only other thing unusual about it was the fact that a fair number of non-Elorn monarchs attended.
Oh, Belgarath said.
Who? The King of the Sindars, the Emperor of Tolnedra, and King Drosta of Garagnadrak. The King of Arendia was ill, but he sent representatives.
Now what are they up to?
Belgarath muttered.
We weren't able to get our hands on the agenda,
Vetter told him.
But not long afterward, a delegation of diplomats from their kingdoms went to Rak-Urga. There are rumors that some fairly serious negotiations are going on.
What are they doing?
Belgarath demanded in an exasperated voice.
I've told you over and over not to go off and leave the Elorns unattended.
Belden said.
If there's any way at all for them to do something wrong, they'll do it.
The price of gold is up,
Vetter continued,
and the price of Malorian crowns is down. Malcine Imperials are holding steady, but the diamond market is fluctuating so wildly that we have withdrawn our investments in that commodity. That is more or less what's current, Your Highness. I'll have a more detailed report on your desk first thing in the morning.
Thank you, Vetter, Silk replied. That's all for right now. Vetter bowed and quietly left. Belgarath began to pace up and down, swearing to himself.
There is nothing you can do about it, Father, Olgara told him. So why upset yourself?
Perhaps they have some reason for what they are doing, Silk suggested.
What possible reason could they have to be negotiating with the Murgos?
I don't know,
Silk spread his hands. I wasn't there when they made the decision. Maybe Urgot offered them something they wanted.
Belgarath continued to swear. About a half hour later, they adjourned to the dining room and took seats near one end of a table that could easily have accommodated a half of 100. The linen was snowy white, the knives and forks were solid silver, and the porcelain plates were edged in gold. The service was exquisite, and the meal was of banquet proportions.
I must talk with your cook, Polgora said as they lingered over dessert. He appears to be a man of talent.
Oh, I should hope so, Silk replied. He's costing me enough.
I'd say you can afford it,
Durnick noted, looking around at the luxurious furnishings. Silk leaned back in his chair, toying with the stem of a silver goblet. It doesn't really make much sense to maintain a place like this, when I only come here about twice a year, he admitted. But it is expected, I guess.
Doesn't Yarblick use it too?
Geryon asked him. Silk shook his head. No. Yarblick and I have an agreement.
I give him free rein in the rest of the world, as long as he stays out of Melsina. He doesn't really fit in here, and he insists on taking Vela with him every place he goes. Vela really shocks the Melsines.
She's a good wench, though, Belden said, grinning. When this is all over, I might just buy her.
That's disgusting,
Sinedra flared.
What did I say? Belden looked confused.
She's not a cow, you know.
No. If I wanted a cow, I'd buy a cow.
You can't just buy people.
Well, of course you can. She's a Nadrak woman. She would be insulted if I didn't try to buy her.
Just be careful of her knives, Uncle, Polgara cautioned. She is very quick with them. He shrugged.
Everybody has a few bad habits.
Geryon did not sleep well that night, although the bed he shared with Tenedra was deep and soft. At first, he thought that might be part of the problem. He had been sleeping on the ground for weeks now, and it seemed reasonable that he was just not used to a soft bed. About midnight, however, he realized that the bed had nothing to do with his sleeplessness. Time was moving on inexorably, and his meeting with Zandramos marched toward him with a measured, unstoppable pace. He still knew little more than he had at the beginning. He was, to be sure, closer to her than he had been at the start, no more than a week at most behind, if the reports were correct. But he was still trailing after her, and he still did not know where she was leading him. Darkly, he muttered a few choice oaths at the madman who had written the Mrin Codex. Why did it all have to be so cryptic? Why couldn't it have been written in plain language? Because, if it had been, half the world would be waiting for you when you got to the place of the meeting, the dry voice in his mind told him. You're not the only one who wants to find the Sardian, you know. I thought you'd left for good. Oh, no, I'm still around. How far behind Zandramas are we? About 3 days. Geryon felt a wild surge of hope. Don't get too excited, the voice said. And don't just dash off as soon as you find the trail again. There's something else that has to be done here. What? You know better than to ask that, Geryon. I can't tell you. So quit trying to trick me into answering. Why can't you just tell me? Because if I tell you certain things, the other spirit will be free to tell other things to Zandramas, like the location of the place which is no more, for instance. You mean she doesn't know? Geryon asked incredulously. Of course she doesn't know. If she knew, she'd be there by now. Then the location isn't written down in the Ashabine oracles? Obviously. Pay attention tomorrow. Somebody's going to say something in passing that is very important. Don't miss it. Who's going to say it? But the voice was gone. It was breezy the following morning when Silk and Geryon set out, wearing long robes of a sober blue color. At Silk's suggestion, Geryon had detached the orb from the hilt of his sword and carried it concealed beneath his robe. "Melusines rarely wear arms inside the city," the little man had explained, "and your sword is very conspicuous." They did not take their horses, but rather walked out into the street to mingle with the citizens of Melsina. "We might as well start along the waterfront," Silk suggested. "Each wharf is owned by a different group of businessmen, and if we can find out which wharf Zandramas landed on, we'll know whom to question for more information." "Sounds reasonable," Geryon said, striding off toward the harbor. "Don't run," Silk told him. "I'm not." "You're moving too fast," the little man said.
People in Malsina go at a more stately pace. You know, Silk, I really don't care what the people here think of me. I'm not here to waste time. Silk took hold of his friend's arm with a firm grip.
Geryon, he said seriously, we know that Zandramas and her underling have come here. She knows that we are after her, and there are people in Malsina who can be hired for various kinds of mischief. Let's not make it easy for them by standing out in the crowd.
Geryon looked at him. All right. We'll do it your way. They walked at an infuriatingly slow pace down a broad avenue. At one point, Silk stopped with a muttered oath.
What's wrong? Geryon asked him.
That fellow just ahead. The one with the big nose. He is a member of Braedor's secret police.
Are you sure?
Silk nodded. I have known him for quite some time. The little man squared his shoulders.
Well, there's no help for it, I guess. He has already seen us. Let's move along.
But the man with the large bulbous nose moved forward to stand in their path.
Good morning, Prince Keldar, he said, bowing slightly.
Rola? Silk replied distantly.
And your majesty,
Rola added, bowing more deeply to Geryon.
We weren't expecting you to appear here in Malsina. Braedor will be very surprised.
Surprises are good for him, Silk shrugged. An unsurprised man gets complacent.
The Emperor was most put out with you, your majesty,
Rola said reproachfully to Geryon.
I'm sure he will survive it.
In Meloria, your majesty, it is the ones who offend Khal Zakath who need to be concerned about survival.
Don't make threats, Rola. If his majesty here decides that your report to the chief of the Bureau of Internal Affairs would be embarrassing, he might decide to take steps to keep you from ever writing it. His majesty is an Aelorn, after all, and you know how short-tempered they can be.
Rola stepped back apprehensively.
Always nice talking with you, Rola, Silk said in a tone of dismissal. Then he and Geryon walked on. Geryon noticed that the big-nosed man had a slightly worried look on his face as they passed him.
I'd love to do that to people, Silk smirked.
You are easily amused, Geryon said. You do know that when his report gets to Malzeth, Zakath's going to flood this whole region with people trying to find us.
Do you want me to go back and kill him for you? Silk offered.
Of course not. I didn't think so. If you can't do something about a situation, there's no point in worrying about it.
When they reached the harbor, Geryon tightened his grip on the orb. The pulling of Iron Grip's sword had sometimes been quite strong, and Geryon had no desire to have the stone jump out of his hand. They walked northward along the wharves with the salt tang of the sea in their nostrils. The harbor of Malsina, unlike that of most of the port cities in the world, was surprisingly clear of floating garbage.
How do they keep it so clean? Geryon asked curiously. The water, I mean.
There is a heavy fine for throwing things into the harbor, Silk replied.
Melusines are compulsively tidy. They also have workmen with nets in small boats patrolling the waterfront to scoop up any floating debris.
It helps to maintain full employment, he grinned. It's a nasty job, and it's always assigned to people who aren't interested in finding regular work. A few days in a small boat full of garbage and dead fish increases their ambition enormously.
You know, Geryon said. That's really a very good idea.
I wonder if... The orb suddenly grew very warm in his hand. He pulled his robe open slightly and looked at it. It was glowing a sullen red.
Zandramas? Silk asked.
Geryon shook his head.
The Sardian, he replied.
Silk nervously tugged at his nose.
That's sort of a dilemma, isn't it? Do we follow the Sardian, or Zandramas?
Zandramas, Geryon said. She's the one who's got my son.
It's up to you, Silk shrugged. That's the last wharf just up ahead. If we don't pick up the trail there, we'll go on and check the north gate. They passed the last wharf. The orb gave no indication of interest.
Could they have landed on one of the other islands? Geryon asked with a worried frown.
Not unless they changed course once they were at sea, Silk replied. There are plenty of other places to land a ship along the coast. Let's go have a look at the north gate. Once again, they moved through the streets at that frustratingly leisurely pace. After they had crossed several streets, Silk stopped.
Oh, no, he groaned. What is it?
That fat man coming this way is Viscount Eska. He is one of the senior members of the Mersin Consortium. He is bound to want to talk business.
Tell him we have an appointment.
It wouldn't do any good. Time doesn't mean that much to Mersin's.
Why, there you are, Prince Keldar,
the fat man in a gray robe said, waddling up to them.
I've been looking all over the city for you.
Viscount Eska, Silk said, bowing.
My colleagues and I have stood in awe of your recent venture into the commodities market,
Eska said admiringly. Silk's eyes grew sly, and his long nose twitched. Then he assumed a pained expression. A blunder, actually, my dear Viscount, he said mournfully. There's little profit to be made in something as bulky as farm produce.
Have you been keeping abreast of the market?
Eska asked, his face taking on a transparent cast of neutrality, but his eyes filled with undisguised greed. No, Silk lied. Not really. I've been up country, and I haven't had the chance to talk with my factor as yet. I left instructions for him to take the first offer that comes along, though, even if we have to take a loss. I need my warehouses, and they are filled to the rafters with beans.
Well, now,
Eska said, rubbing his hands together.
I'll speak with my colleagues. Perhaps we can make you a modest offer.
He had begun to sweat. Oh, I couldn't let you do that, Eska. My holdings are virtually worthless. Why don't we let some stranger take the loss? I couldn't really do that to a friend.
But my dear Prince Keldar,
Eska protested in a tone verging on anguish,
we wouldn't really expect to make a vast profit. Our purchase would be more in the nature of long-term speculation.
Well, Silk said dubiously, as long as you are fully aware of the risks involved.
Oh, we are. We are,
Eska said eagerly. Silk sighed. All right, then. Why don't you make an offer to Vetter? I'll trust you not to take advantage of my situation.
Oh, of course, Keldar. Of course.
Eska bowed hastily.
I really must be off now. Pressing business, you understand.
Oh, Silk said, quite. Eska waddled off at an unseemly rate of speed. Hooked him, Silk chortled. Now I'll let Vetter land him.
Don't you ever think about anything else? Geryon asked.
Of course I do, but we're busy right now. And we didn't have all morning to listen to him babble. Let's move along, shall we?
A thought occurred to Geryon. What if Zandramas avoided the city?
Then we will get our horses and check the coastline. She had to have landed somewhere.
As they approached the north gate of Mersina, the press in the street grew noticeably heavier. Carriages and people on horseback began to become more frequent, and the normally sedate citizens began to move more rapidly. Geryon and Silk found it necessary to push their way through the throng.
Anything? Silk asked.
Not yet, Geryon replied,
taking a firmer grip on the orb. Then, as they passed a side street, he felt the now familiar pulling.
"She's been here," he reported. "She came out of that street. Or went into it. I can't quite tell which yet."
He went a few steps up the side street. The orb tried to push him back. He turned around and rejoined his rat-faced friend. The steady pull of the orb drew him toward the gate.
"She went out this way," he reported, as they reached the arched opening.
"Good," Silk said. "Let's go back and get the others. And then maybe we can find out why Zandramos came to Melsina." Chapter 5.
It seemed somehow that Geryon's impatience had communicated itself to Chrétien. The big gray stallion was restive as they left Silk's house and rode into the street, and he flicked his ears in irritation as Geryon tried to curb him with the reins. Even the sound of his steel-shod hooves on the cobblestones came as a kind of restless staccato. As Geryon leaned forward to lay a calming hand on the arched gray neck, he could feel the nervous quivering of the horse's muscles under the sleek skin.
"I know," he said. "I feel the same way. But we have to wait until we are outside of the city before we can run."
Chrétien snorted, and then made a plaintive whinnying sound.
"It won't take that long," Geryon assured him.
They rode in single file through the busy streets with Silk in the lead. The breeze swirling through the streets carried with it the dusty smell of autumn.
"What are all of those buildings over there?"
Arionde called ahead to Silk. The blonde young man pointed toward a large complex of structures that seemed to be set in the center of a lush green park.
"The University of Melsina," Silk replied. "It is the largest institution of higher learning in the world."
"Even bigger than the one in Tolhonath?" Geryon asked.
"Oh, yes, much. The Melsines study everything. There are branches of learning at that university that the Tolnedrans won't even admit exist."
"Oh? Such as what?"
"Applied alchemy, astrology, necromancy, fundamentals of witchcraft, that sort of thing. They've even got an entire college devoted to the reading of tea leaves."
"You're not serious."
"I'm not. But they are."
Geryon laughed and rode on. The streets of Melsina grew even busier. But there was a decorum to the bustle. No matter how urgent his affairs might be, a Melsine businessman was never so preoccupied that he did not have time for a friendly chat with one of his competitors. The snatches of conversation Geryon heard as they rode along the boulevards ranged in subject from the weather to politics to flower arrangement. The major concentration that morning, however, seemed to be centered on the price of beans. When they reached the north gate, the great sword strapped across Geryon's back began to pull at him. Despite Silk's critical look, Geryon had decided that he was not going out into the countryside without the sword. Zandramas had a way of leaving traps behind her, and Geryon definitely did not want to walk into one of them unprepared. As they passed through the gate, he nudged Chrétien forward to ride beside Silk.
"The trail seems to be following this road," he said, pointing up a broad highway stretching off to the north.
"At least it doesn't go across open country," Silk said. "The ground gets a little marshy in spots up here, and I hate to ride through the mud."
Belgarath had said nothing since they had left Silk's house, but had ridden along with an irritated expression on his face. Now he came forward to join Silk and Geryon. He looked around to make sure that none of the local citizens were close enough to overhear what they were saying. Then he spoke to Geryon.
"Let's go over it again. Step by step this time. Exactly what did your friend say?"
"Well," Geryon replied, "he started out by saying that all of the prophecies are cryptic in order to keep the information out of the wrong hands."
"That makes a certain amount of sense, Belgarath," Belden said from just behind them.
It might make sense, Belgarath said, but it doesn't make things any easier.
Nobody promised you easy.
I know. I just wish they would stop going out of their way to make it difficult. Go ahead, Geryon.
Then he said that we were only 3 days behind Zandramas.
That means that she has left the island, Silk noted.
How did you arrive at that conclusion? Belgarath asked.
Melsina is a big island, but not that big. You can ride from one end of it to the other in 2 days. She might have gone on to one of the northern islands, but if there were 3 days behind her, she isn't on this one anymore.
Belgarath grunted. What else did he say? He asked Geryon.
He said that there's something else we have to do here, besides finding the trail, I mean.
I gather he wasn't very specific.
No. He explained why not, though. He said if he told me what it was, the other prophecy could tell Zandramas certain things she didn't know yet. That's when he told me that she doesn't know where the place which is no more is, and that the location's not in the Ashabin oracles.
Did he give you any clues at all about this task of ours?
Only that somebody's going to say something to us today that's very important.
Who?
He wouldn't tell me. All he said was that somebody was going to say something in passing that we shouldn't miss. He said that we should be alert for that kind of thing.
Anything else?
No. That's when he left.
The old man started to swear.
I felt pretty much the same way myself, Geryon agreed.
He's done as much as he can, Belgarath, Velden said. The rest is up to us.
Belgarath made a wry face. I suppose you're right.
Of course I'm right. I'm always right.
I wouldn't go that far. Well, first things first, I guess. Let's find out where Zandramas went. Then we can start analyzing every casual remark we hear. He turned in his saddle. Keep your ears open today, all of you. And then he nudged his mount into a trot.
A rider in sober blue galloped past, going toward the city with uncharacteristic haste. Silk began to laugh after the men had passed them.
Well, who was that? Dernick asked.
A member of the consortium, Silk replied gaily. It appears that Viscount Esker's called an emergency session.
Is this something I ought to know about?
Belgarath asked.
Not unless you're interested in the market price of beans.
Will you keep your mind on what we are here for, and stop playing?
It was sort of necessary, Grandfather, Geryon came to his friend's defense. The Viscount stopped us in the street while we were looking for the trail. He'd have talked all day if Silk hadn't sent him off on a fool's errand.
Did he say anything at all that might be what we are looking for?
No, he just talked about beans.
Did you meet anybody else today? Share these little encounters with us, Geryon.
We ran into one of Brador's secret policemen. I'd imagine that his messenger is already on the way to Melzeth.
Did he say anything?
He made a few veiled threats, is all. I guess Emperor Zakath's a little unhappy with us. The policeman recognized me, but I suppose that's only natural. Silk was going to kill him, but I said no.
Why?
Belden asked bluntly.
We were in the middle of a busy street, for one thing. Killing somebody's the sort of thing you ought to do in private, wouldn't you say?
You were a much nicer boy before you developed this clever mouth,
Belden snapped. Geryon shrugged.
Nothing ever stays the same, Uncle.
Be polite, Geryon, Polgara called from behind.
Yes, ma'am.
A black carriage rattled by. The team of white horses drawing it was moving at a dead run, and they were flecked with foam.
Another bean buyer? Belgarath asked.
Silk smirked and nodded. Dernick had been looking around.
I don't see any signs that this land is being farmed.
Silk laughed. Land in Melusina's
too valuable to be wasted on farming, Danik. The people here import all their food from the mainland. About all we'll find out here are the estates of the very wealthy, retired businessmen, nobles, that sort of thing. The whole countryside's one huge park. Even the mountains have been landscaped.
Well, it doesn't seem very practical, Dernick said disapprovingly.
The people who live on the estates spend a great deal of money for them, so I guess they can do what they like with the land.
Well, still seems wasteful.
Of course it is. That's what the rich people do best, waste things. The green hills to the north of the city were gently rolling, and were dotted with artistically placed groves of trees. Many of the trees had been carefully pruned to accentuate their pleasing shapes. Garion found this tampering with nature somehow offensive. It appeared that he was not alone in the feeling. Sinedra rode with a stiff look of disapproval on her face, and frequently made little sounds of disgust, usually at the sight of a well-trimmed oak tree. They moved into a canter, following the trail north along a road surfaced with gleaming white gravel. The road curved gently from hillside to hillside, and in level spots it frequently made wide bends, evidently for no other purpose than to relieve the monotony of long, straight stretches. The houses, set far back from the road, were universally constructed of marble, and were usually surrounded by parks and gardens. It was a sunny autumn day, and the prevailing breeze carried with it the smell of the sea, a smell Garion found very familiar. He suddenly felt a sharp pang of homesickness for Eva. As they cantered past one estate, a large number of gaily dressed people crossed the road ahead of them at a gallop, chasing after a pack of barking dogs. The people jumped fences and ditches with what appeared to be reckless abandon.
"What are they doing?"
Ariand called to Silk.
"Fox hunting."
"Well, it doesn't really make any sense, Silk," Dernick objected. "If they don't farm, they don't raise chickens. Why are they worried about foxes?"
"It makes even less sense, in view of the fact that the fox is not native to these islands. They have to be imported."
"Oh, that's ridiculous."
"Of course it is. Rich people are always ridiculous, and their sports are usually exotic and often cruel."
Belden gave an ugly little chuckle.
"I wonder how sporting they'd find chasing a pack of Algroths, or maybe an Eldrak or two."
"Never mind," Belgarath told him.
"It wouldn't really take much effort to raise a few, Belgarath,"
the hunchback grinned.
"Or maybe some trolls," he mused. "Trolls are great fun, and I'd love to see the look on the face of one of those overdressed butterflies when he jumped a fence and came face to face with a full-grown troll."
"Never mind," Belgarath repeated.
The road forked at one point, and the orb pulled toward the left. "She's headed toward the ocean again," Silk noted.
"I wonder what it is that makes her so fond of water. She's been hopping from island to island ever since we started after her."
"Maybe she knows that the orb can't follow her over water," Garion said.
"I don't think that would be her major concern at this point," Polgara disagreed. "Time is running out for her as well as us. She doesn't have the leisure for side trips."
The road they were following led down toward the cliffs, and finally, the orb pulled Garion onto a long paved drive that curved down toward an imposing house set at the very edge of a precipitous drop and overlooking the ocean far below. As they rode toward the house, Garion loosened his sword in its scabbard.
"Expecting trouble?" Silk asked.
"I just like to be ready," Garion replied. "That's a big house up ahead, and a lot of people could be hiding inside."
The men who came out of the cliff-top villa, however, were not armed, and they were all garbed in purple livery.